Good day, everyone, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Submitting Successful Claims to Improve Cost Reimbursement and Allowance Rates conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Adele Barr. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your time, and we have lots of great information for you today. I do want to point out that we have a chat section. Well, not the chat section. You can ask a question, and that will come directly to us at admin. So if any time during the presentation you have a question, please feel free to pop it in there, and we will get to those as we can. And what we're going to do is we're also going to have questions and answers at the end of the presentation. So while you're going along, you want to make sure that you have any questions aside that some that you may be putting in the ask the question pod, you can also jot those down and ask those when we open up the lines at the end for question and answers. Additionally, there is a presentation. The presentation we will show today has a slide that is only and strictly for this particular presentation in the audience that we have right now. That means later on, somewhere between slide 24, I believe, will not be available when we post this in our archives. So just so that you know, when we get to that slide, I'll also announce it then, but just so that you know that that's only for us right now, and then when it gets posted, it won't be available. Okay, for today, we have our sponsors today, Social Security Administration, the Office of Employment Support, the Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehabilitation, and the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind. Thank you so much for helping us to put this information together. So today we're going to go over cost reimbursement claims checklist. We're also going to discuss top reasons for denial and the Vocational Rehabilitation Client Earnings Report, also known as VERSER, and the State Vocational Rehabilitation Agencies are more than gracious to share their tips today with us. For today's presentation, we did have Robert Paff, who was going to speak instead of Robert today. Katie Strivinger from the Office of Employment Support will join us, and she is the VR Branch Chief. Also, John Connolly, the Director of Research and Grants with CSA VR, will be with us. Shada Roper, the VR Policy Analyst, who will go over our training today. And we have Eric Schmidt from Maryland Division Rehabilitation Services, and Kyle Beeson, the Staff Specialist for Program Income with Maryland Doors. Also assisting us today will be Annie Zaffron, and that's from, she's the Reimbursement Coordinator for Texas Workforce Commission. We have Ann Lynn Ganton helping us today also, SSA and Ticket to Work Coordinator from Virginia Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired. Arlene Lugo is here to help us today, Ticket to Work Coordinator from Connecticut Vocational Rehabilitation Agency. David Leon, the Deputy Director of Workforce Programs with Virginia Department. And Sue Tegen, the Cost Reimbursement Specialist out of Virginia. At this time, what I'd like to do, I'm going to go ahead and give an opportunity for Katie and John to speak. So I'll turn it over to Katie Strivinger to speak a little for us today.
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking time out of your day to attend this special training. Our goal is to provide information that will improve state allowance rates, that will help us lower our backlog and ensure that we are paying claims timely. We have a rare opportunity to present some of our best practices, sharing information that we normally present when we host our on-site training with you today. We look forward to your feedback after this training. And without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to John Connolly.
Well, thank you, Katie. I want to begin by thanking SSA, CSAVR, and NCSAB, as well as Maximus, for coming together in partnership to put this training together, and also the presenters for their willingness to share their knowledge and expertise and tips with us this afternoon. As Katie was saying, you know, I think the goals of this training are to substantially improve the claims grant rate, eliminate multiple submissions of the same claim, and increase the amount and timeliness of cost reimbursement to VR agencies. Today, we want to make sure that ticket coordinators and others responsible for cost reimbursement are aware of the challenges and opportunities in regard to cost reimbursement and provide suggestions for substantially, again, improving the grant rate, which at the last report I saw was nationally 50%. 50% of claims being submitted for cost reimbursement were being granted. The remaining 50% were not, because they were not being filed timely or they did not have key information that is needed by Social Security to process the claim and hopefully grant the claim. So this is a wonderful opportunity to learn again from very experienced folks about successful strategies and new tools such as Verser, and you're going to hear all of this afternoon, and I hope it will be helpful to you in, again, improving that grant rate. So thank you all for taking the time to tune in to the webinar this afternoon, and I will turn it back to our moderator.
Thank you so much, Katie, and thank you so much, John. Appreciate that. And for the sake of time, we will roll on over, and we will have Shada, who will help us better understand and get to know the cost reimbursement claims checklist.
Thank you, Adele. Good afternoon, everyone. We are in unprecedented times, but we are here setting a precedent. So this is an unusual set-in for us to have our training. I sure do miss seeing some of your faces at the agency where we would have had our breakfast and laughs and so forth. But I echo what everyone else said. This is like a wonderful opportunity for you to get some information to improve the grant rate, and it actually allows us to be able to make this training available on a larger platform. So I'm excited to be a part of this, and hopefully the information that we provide you today will give some more transparency. It will help your claims be more consistent, and that you will have larger success rates where it won't be 50%. It will be 70 and 80 and even 90% grant rates. So we are definitely here to extend information to you that hopefully will get you to that point where the reimbursements are at maximum payout amounts. So without further ado, we will start off with a checklist for you as the VRs for what you have to have when you are submitting these claims. On page 7, the checklist consists of knowing and including your client's earnings for the evidence. So make sure that we have that evidence there for us. Include all information pertinent to the evidence for the claims and reconsideration. Ensure that the claims are in use SVR. As you know, we are also part of the ticket program, so the cost reimbursement program is also in alignment with the ticket program, so some of our claimants have tickets and they need to be assigned to the vocational rehabilitation agency that is working with them. We want to make sure that when you submit these claims to us that they are in use with your VR agency. And then have the 199 form ready for submitting. Multiple categories, meaning that you provide several services under RSA and FSA, the services that you provide for the claimant, so we know that the costs that you are requesting to be reimbursed are going to be multiple, and we want to make sure that you are able to get those costs in, and we'll go through why that $199 is so important in the coming slides. Slide 8, we're going over this in more detail to know and include the evidence of the client's earnings. Check to make sure you have 9 out of 12 months of substantial gainful earning levels. That right there for you wouldn't be 9 out of 12 months. We'll go through how SSA reviews your claims and how we're able to reimburse you. So we know that as VRs, you actually use quarterly earnings. So 9 out of 12 months, we're looking at least 3/4 of SGA. And during this presentation, I will go over just the SGA limits for blind and non-blind for 2019 to give you a notion of what we're speaking of, so you can have some kind of guidance and idea of what we go through as we're looking through these claims to reimburse you and make a determination. Acceptable proofs, and we provide all this information in our handbook and in BLAST and so forth, so we give you information to make sure that the evidence that you're submitting to us, it's going to be evidence that's going to be acceptable. That way we ensure that you are able to have reimbursement. So acceptable evidence include pay stubs. We call those, that's a primary source of evidence. That's the first source. Employer signed statement with FICA withholdings and printout from the work numbers. Some of you are able to have access to the work number. That's been a best friend to us at SSA as well. When we, and as some of you know, our earnings don't always update as fast as yours, so we're not necessarily as quick as yours. We're also reliant on the claimants to tell us that, yes, I'm working, I'm making SGA. So our systems don't always update, and as VR, we get our information from our Office of Disability, so they are the ones that actually put that earnings information in the system for us to be able to see. So we're working with other SSA offices to find this evidence or obtain this evidence. If for whatever reason Social Security cannot find 9 months, which is 3/4 on your end, we will have to deny the claim of $590. The 590 came about a few months ago, so that's one of our policies that we set in hand to ensure that you are doing what you're supposed to as VRs when you send in the information. It is the law for you to at least say, yes, I was pretty much sure that this claim was payable. I thought in my mind that I would receive payment because I had evidence that this person was working and they were working at SGA levels and they could obtain at least 3/4, 9 out of 12 months of SGA. So I submitted this claim with clear knowledge that this was a claim that was absolutely reimbursable at the maximum requested amount. So if we do not have that, then your claim will be denied on site. On slide number 8, we ask that you include all pertinent information and evidence with reconsideration claims. And this is always something that we've addressed in our handbook through all calls and so forth, emails, blasts. Please, if you're able to provide us with information about the claim, that actually makes it easier for us to process the claim because you've laid it out for us. And we have certain states who are saying, I want reconsideration, and it's for A, B, C, D, and they've laid it out for us. So when we're opening that claim or when we get into the weeds of the claim, we have things clear in our mind that says now, oh, okay, they said this. Yep, they're absolutely right. Yeah, this is what's going on. It's absolutely true. Like it helps us go with the processing along better, so there it's timely, because that's also an issue. We're trying to cut down the backlog. We want to get robust payments to you, and we want to do them in a timely fashion, especially at a time like this where we know you absolutely need your reimbursement. So if a claim has possible transitional work, and I'll give you an idea of transitional work in a moment, please send a signed copy of the client's individualized employment plan for employment and showing how the state was able to assist them in getting to SGA. In addition, we need case notes. We need any amended IPEs. We need any information that you can give us to say, I helped this person to get to the point where they were at SGA. So I want to give you a framework of what transitional work is in your mind to give you some kind of picture. So I'm going to lay out a scenario for you. We have a claim, the enter date, and I know you're not using those exact terms now, enter and closure, so I'm just following what would have been on a VR claim prior to all the changes with WIOA and RSA. So we're going to say the enter date was 5/2012, and we're going to say that the closure date was 6/2016. So we started at 5/2012, and we ended at 6/2016 to get those dates as a framework in your mind. The closure date for us is what counts when we're speaking of transitional work. So the closure date is 6/2016. You have a year from 6/2016, which would make it 5/2017. By 5/2017, there should be some dollar amount. It does not have to be SGA, but this client or claimant should be earning money at some point in time between 6/2016 and 5/2017. However, if on our end we're reviewing this claim and we see, well, 1/2019 is when the SGA began, and there's no dollar amount between that 5 and that, or that 6/2016 and that 5/2017, we will send out a notice for transitional work. We're saying that you also put on your claims, which you believe to be employment dates, and sometimes your employment date matches ours, and sometimes it doesn't. So if you found out that they were employed in 1/2019, we're saying what happened in those years that there was no dollar amount. They didn't have any kind of earnings. They weren't working. You had a notion that in 1/2019 they started working. Where is the time? What happened to the lapse in time? Why weren't they working? What's going on? So if you could send us that evidence even before we request it in a notice, because as you know, we then give you a time period to then send back that information to us, that IPE and the case notes, and it has to be a signed copy of that IPE. And yes, we do understand that RSA's rules for destroying information and our rules aren't necessarily in complete alignment. So we've also sent out guidance for, destroying information or evidence. And we made sure to put it in a blast, to put it in our handbook. And if those of you who don't know, years ago we had an audit, and we had to recoup a lot of money under this transitional work regulation because we didn't have evidence where the VR had actually helped them. And it's not to say that you didn't help them, but our auditors say that we should have had those IPEs with case notes, and we should have known why it took so long to get to SGA. And then we were recouping money from VRs from years in the past, because under audit, there is no time to recoup that money. You were under audit. So that also creates a terrible detriment to you as the VR agency, that you're going back to, 2015 for us to recoup money, and you were paid so long ago. You're absolutely not thinking about this anymore. we do not want to put you in that kind of predicament anymore. So it is your right, yes, to have this notice and the time. However, when submitting the claim, if you can kind of gauge in advance that, yeah, there might be transitional work evidence needed, I probably should go ahead and submit something. Because remember, if the person earned $50 between that 5/2016 or that 6/2016 and the 5/2017, we won't send you a notice. We'll say, oh, okay, the VR must have been with them. So just that 1 month matters. But if there's no earnings anywhere for us to find until 2019, we're going to send you that notice that delays the claim. We're putting it on hold. That adds to the backlog. You're searching for information. And we could have stopped all of this from the beginning where you kind of saw that, yes. And no, you can't always do that. But given the chance, we're saying submit all the information if you can. We put a big, made sure that remember for the reconsideration was capitalized because it is the most accurate thing for us to do policy-wise to have one reconsideration. We cannot have reconsiderations where it's the same claim, it's the same evidence, and 9 times we've reconsidered this same claim, and our notice actually says this is your final appeal. And then you get another appeal on it that says this is your final appeal. And the third time, it's your final appeal. So we actually have to take the law at face value and say, okay, you have one reconsideration. Make sure, and we have plenty of states who do this, and they do this well. Make sure when you're submitting those reconsiderations that you've explained everything to us. I need reconsideration. This claim was denied. Somebody please take a second look at it, and in the remarks, include the date of the initial denial. We've had system issues, so those dates matters to us, and then it helps you from getting some other type of denial based on timely filing and dates. The denial code also helps us. An earnings denial is different from, you know, a denial based on termination or other reasons, and we have all kinds of denials. So just make sure you kind of give us information about what it is you want when we open this claim. And then comments from the help desk. Some of you contact us via email. There are only a few of us who work on the help desk. So you contact us via personal email. In addition to the help desk, both one, the other, phone calls. So, yeah, this is a time to name drop. I spoke to Shada. She actually went through these 5 reconsiderations with me, and the reason why I'm even sending them back is because Shada said they look like they could be reconsidered and there probably could be a different decision. There might be a different, it might even be a denial, but that denial that you gave me initially is incorrect, and the denial code actually matters. So we know all of that is important. So please, if you could, all that information matters, and it is going to boost your payment rate. On slide 10, make sure that if they are in our ticket program, as we know, we have cost reimbursement by itself, and then we also have our ticket program. Make sure that it is coded in use SVR. And make sure that it's with your VR. We don't want to later find out it's really with an EN. You don't have an agreement with the EN. Now you're filing for cost reimbursement. That also holds up your claim because now we're looking for additional information, or it could be a possible denial. So just make sure, and then we also know that claimants move, or one VR might not be able to provide the service that another VR is able to provide. So just, you know, make it that, yeah, they were coming from the California VR, but now they're with the Texas VR, and they move. Make sure now Texas, you know, has that ticket information, and now they're with Texas. If it's with California, we're going to say, well, California is still holding that ticket. That's going to be a problem. So that's going to hold up your claim. So back to that backlog, in addition to there could be a chance of denial. On slide 11, we're requesting the 199 form. And we're only saying it because, as you know, and this happens to us too, our portal times out or our screens time out. So as we're putting information in, sometimes when we're processing your claim, they time out, the system times out, and we have to start over. So it starts over, all the information is lost, and we're like, oh, man. Well, sometimes you have only three costs, and you're able to, you know, put those costs in under the cost screen. Sometimes you have 80 costs, and you're not able to put in 80. And actually, we've heard cases where you're not even able to put in the three. So what we're saying is make sure that you have that 199 in when you're not able to put in all the costs. When Katie used to do the portal training, she reminded you to just put one big cost and put the time span. And then that 199 now tells us the individual cost that we're paying under the laws of RSA and SSA. So we're looking, are those costs payable? Does this fall under what RSA guidance says, what SSA guidance said, these costs that and the services that were provided? And we're able to see them one by one to say, oh, okay, here are the costs, and here's the time period for the cost, and here's the amount of the cost. So now we know, and that also falls into, as some of you know, having to do with the payment period. So if we don't have that 199, that could lead to additional questions about how the costs don't fall into this payment period. Do you have any additional evidence to provide us with about this payment period? So, of course, we then put your claim on hold again, and we're sending out information to you because we don't have all the information to deny or pay your claim. So from the beginning, if we could have all this information, it makes it smoother for you. You have a greater chance of having maximum reimbursement. In addition, then it makes it better for us. Like, this is a payment program, and trust and believe, we want to make sure that we pay you. We have several systems that we check to say, do they have SGA? Are there dollar amounts? What's going on with this claim that we're able to check to pay you? That's what this program's about. That's what we want to do. Every time we touch a claim, we want to make sure we pay you. And we want to make sure we pay you at your requested amount, and sometimes even more, having to do with time periods. Some of you know how that works, and cost formula and ACP and those things. So we want to ensure that you get the payment that you need. This is the end of the first segment for Voc Rehab. I will turn it over to Adele for the next presenter.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Shada. I just want to remind everyone that I have been receiving questions, and we will answer those and read those when we get to the Q&A section. As Shada indicated, though, and we did at the top of the call indicate that we have VR folks who want to help us out. And so we have the state VR agencies sharing their tips, and on this particular section, we'll have Eric Schmidt and Kyle Beeson from Maryland Doors help us out.
Okay. Hey, it's Eric. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so I guess I'll just start off by saying good afternoon from Maryland, and thanks to SSA, CSAVR, and CSAB, and Maximus for putting this training together for us and for allowing us the opportunity to learn about strategies to improve our allowance rates and hopefully make each other's jobs a little bit easier. So I'd also like to thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about the importance of data validation and ensuring accuracy and integrity of the data that's gathered by states prior to them actually submitting claims to SSA, so that everything that's required on the checklist that Shada mentioned is available, is clear, and is accurate, so that way there's less chance of, you know, potentially sending a claim that's going to be denied. Now, I would recognize right off the bat that not every state is set up exactly the same. And so, you know, some of the stuff that we're going to talk about, maybe it's a little bit Maryland specific, but I think there's a lot of information that, that can be gained for everybody. So in Maryland, for example, a large portion of data verification and validation is actually handled by our office. But I know that in other states, from talking to folks, you know, that may be a completely different department, whether or not that's maybe your IT department, maybe that's your case management team, whoever reports the federal data to RSA, whoever that may be. So to our counterparts, you know, in the audience today, what I would suggest is that if it's not you who has that specific responsibility for verifying and validating data on Social Security benefits and ticket to work status and assignability at the outset of a case, it would be good to sit down with whomever that staff person or team is, learn their processes, see if there are areas for improvement or tools or strategies that can be implemented, maybe work to ensure that essential data validation that's necessary to do your job is included in the processes they already have in place, or, you know, how to add those if it's not something that's currently being done in your state. I'd also say, you know, it's always good to reach out to your counterparts in other states who are performing the same or similar kind of job as you, and maybe you can work with them to see if there's additional tools, strategies, resources that you can use in your state as well. So let me just talk a little bit about Maryland. Here in Maryland, we work very closely with our IT staff and our database manager. We work very closely with the case management software contractor that we use. We work with our data experts on 9/11 reporting, and we work with our software developer who manages the cost reimbursement software that we use to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And we also work very closely with our field staff to ensure that everyone understands what information we actually need to submit on a claim, why it's necessary, why it's needed, and ways that we can make sure that we have that information in our system as quickly and as accurately as possible. Because unless everybody's on the same page with what data is needed, why it's important, and how to ensure that it's accurate, then it's very likely that mistakes are going to find their way into the case and that they're going to stay there. And then once that happens, that increases the likelihood that you probably either will never even be able to submit a claim, or if you do submit one, it may be an error, which is just going to result in, you know, increasing denial rate for your state. So Kyle and I are going to talk a little bit about some tools and strategies that we use in Maryland to alleviate that, but I think a lot of these can be applied wherever you are operating. So I'm going to start with verifying demographics, just simple things like name, date of birth, Social Security number. So for us, as soon as the case enters our case management system, all the cases are actually batched in a batch process and sent to our Department of Human Services here, who is kind of our state's gatekeeper to the State Verification Exchange System, SVES, or SEVES as it sometimes is called. And that system is used to ensure that you have the name of the individual right, and that includes the spelling, which we know is very critical in submitting a claim, as well as the correct date of birth and correct Social Security number. And it informs you if it does not have that necessary information, gives you back error codes, things that you can take back to your field counselor to say, okay, something's wrong here with this individual. That name does not match the social. Can we verify that? Maybe we've got a spelling. Maybe they've had a last name change due to a marriage, whatever the case may be. So that's really a critical first step that we do to ensure that the name, the social, those basic demographics are right and correct. And it's very critical, too, not just because that's necessary for the claim, but you're never going to be able to get UI or other wage verification if you don't have the right social for the individual. You're going to send something out, it's going to come back and either have a different person's information or no information at all. So the SVES system can verify that for you. It also verifies the benefit type and the benefit amount, so you have that information, which is important to giving an individual proper services like benefits counseling. And then for our state, you know, it's very important to know the dollar amount for our independent living, old or blind folks, so SVES can provide that too. Recently, we worked with our software developer to automate this process instead of what we used to do was literally manual. Like our field counselor would reach out to us one-on-one, and we'd have a one-off request. We'd have to go in that system manually and check that. Now we've actually spent about the better part of 2 years making this process an automated process so that we're verifying 100% of our cases through this system. And what that does is it actually catches about a 2% error rate on our cases when they're coming in the door. And whether or not that's a typo or maybe somebody's handwriting's hard to read, whatever the case may be, there was a lot of errors coming in the door that get into our system. And so we're trying to solve for that right off the bat to make sure that we have the right information and we don't potentially lose revenue, tickets won't be assigned, whatever the case may be, just because we don't have that information in our system from the get-go correct. So I'm going to turn it over now to Kyle, and he's going to talk a little bit more about that kind of the ticket and wage tracking and some other sources.
Thanks, Eric. And CSAVR, Safe Security, and Maximus for inviting us to speak on behalf of our ways that we handle tickets. And in Maryland, we have an initial manual process to check the status of the ticket to work and an automated process that batches current open cases as well as recently closed cases for submission to the ticket to work portal, which we do on a monthly basis. We do this monthly to ensure ticket assignment is done as soon as possible. And we've decided that we were going to centralize and automate our process of assigning tickets to ensure that that if a ticket status changes during the course of a case, we can assign the ticket, even if the counselor hasn't made our office aware. Further, we want to unassign the ticket timely as well so that the ticket is available to our partner EN agencies if the consumer decides to go to another agency for assignment. All of this data validation early in the case ensures our counselors have the right information, which is critical so that they can conduct eligibility in a timely manner, begin service as appropriate. Furthermore, we want to validate the ticket to work very early in the case so that we can coordinate on unassignment from another EN if they still have it assigned with another agency. And if the individual is assigning their case to DOORS, or if this might be a shared ticket situation, to prevent duplication of services from two different state agencies that may be working with the same person. Finally, we also want to provide all this information to our counselors so that they are aware of the benefits that the consumer is receiving so that they can get appropriate services while in our agency, such as benefits planning, as Eric mentioned previously, which we've found often leads to increased successful outcomes for us and increased false reimbursement amounts for Maryland. Finally, without proper demographics in the case management system, we could not track the individual's wages. In Maryland, we rely on consumer self-report of wages, reports from job developers that we pay to work with our individuals. But we also extensively utilize tools that we receive on a quarterly basis, such as unemployment insurance information, information from the state wage interchange system, the CIS Security Vocational Rehabilitation Client Earnings Report, BERCER, and information from the ticket portal itself on wages. We could not do this if we weren't confident we had the right Social Security number up front for the individual and established at the beginning of the case and ensured all along the way that the ticket was appropriately assigned with our agency. The individual was a Social Security beneficiary and the wages were in line with the claims filing requirements. All these are data-driven components and require coordination with multiple systems and different teams of people. That's not to say this can all be handled automatically. We find that the claims require a fine touch and investigative style and strategies and tools all their own. Next, I'm going to hand it back over to Adele to go forward with Texas's approaches to the claims process itself.
Thank you. Thank you very much to Eric and to Kyle. And as I mentioned earlier, we also still have a few more folks who want to help us out. We have Annie Zephyr from Texas Workforce Commission and Ann Lynn from Virginia, who will give us a few of your tips. Annie?
Thank you, Adele. Good afternoon, everyone. My suggestions for claim submission expound on Eric's and Kyle's ideas somewhat due to the structure here in Texas. My duties as a reimbursement coordinator start with claims being generated by the GMARO ticket tracker before any data validation has taken place. Now, on that subject, if you don't already have access to the GMARO ticket tracker, I highly suggest you obtain it, as I can virtually guarantee that utilizing this software will vastly increase your reimbursements. And since I, as well as over half of the states, use the tracker, I will be referring to specific components of it when listing my suggestions for determining claims with the highest chance of being paid. So the first thing to do is to check your benefits system, and we use SVES also, to ensure that the SSN and client name match. The SSN could have been entered into your case management system incorrectly, or it could be being used fraudulently by someone else. Also, check the system to make sure the client has current benefits. If you use a ticket tracker, a claim will generate even if a client had benefits earlier in time, sometimes years or even decades earlier, meaning that the claim that you're looking at now will not be valid. Conversely, benefits may have started after the client made SGA, and thus you need to start tracking wages again so that you will at least be reimbursed for the latter part of the claim. In the tracker, you do this by marking the current wages as bad to ensure that the claim won't be regenerated until new wages appear. The second thing I do, or you should do, is check your state's wage database to make sure that the SSN and client name match for the reasons just mentioned. Also check this system to make sure the wages are accurate, as wages are sometimes listed twice under different employer ID numbers, thus duplicating the amount. In the tracker, you just view the wage details box, and if the same wages and employer name appear twice, you mark one of those employer IDs as bad and forego submitting the claim. Number three, check your case management system for case notes if a potential claim was closed unsuccessfully and the client did not work for more than a year afterward. Shada already referred to this. SSA will almost always send out a C3 letter asking you to justify how the VR services that you provided assisted your client in getting a job so long after closure. If you found that your VR counselor did very little to assist, sometimes spending months or even years just trying to locate the client, don't submit that claim, as it will simply likely be denied. Now, in regard to Verser, a previously denied claim is often regenerated in the ticket tracker based on Verser wages, even though they are the exact same wages as the ones upon which your original claim was based. So be sure to check the wage details of your original claim carefully to confirm that Verser is showing additional wages on which to base the reconsideration. Now, as for tracking claims that you've sent, the ticket tracker takes care of a lot of this automatically. To run a query of claims that are still unpaid, you simply click on Go to Reimbursements, you choose the All Pending SSA Approval, download the report to Excel, and arrange the information any way you like. Now, I suggest also adding extra columns, such as claim process date, payment received date, and notice of determination received date. Then, log into the SSA portal on a daily basis, if possible, to check the View VR Payments Already Made to Me area. Record the date that your claims were adjudicated in the spreadsheet you downloaded, and update the other columns as well when your payments and NODs are received. This way, you'll easily be able to see at a glance any data that is missing, at which point you can follow up with the VR Help Desk. Be sure to also check your diaries under the View All VR Pending Payments for Me area in the SSA portal, since that is where you will find your C3 notices far ahead of when you will actually receive the hard copy in the mail. And I'm going to hand it back over to Adele.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Again, it's always valuable when we learn from each other. We will go on with Shayla, and she's going to talk about common earning and denial.
Hi, everyone. I believe, and Kyle and Eric and Annie just gave you some very good and useful information. And the good thing about it was it's coming from your VR partner, so it's even better because they know exactly the things that you're going through and what kind of systems you have. And Annie kind of touched bases on this, where she's saying we have other denials, and she was talking about the claims being terminated, and I said that somewhere earlier about, you know, it could have been a denial for another reason. It could have been a termination denial, or it's the wrong record, or what have you. So she touched bases on the fact that there are other denials that you receive other than earnings. We're looking at earnings denials now because this actually is the common reason that you're denied on your claims. But I was glad that Annie referenced those other things that are happening to you and having to do with Ticket Tracker, because she also touched bases on that. And that's the thing that you're going to hear as you're hearing about this 590 in earnings. So looking at slide 15, we have the common earnings denial.
This is Adele. Let me interrupt for a second. I'm sorry. Did I want to make sure that I didn't skip one of our VR folks?
Okay, my apologies. Sorry, Adele.
Did both Annie and Lynn speak?
I did not hear Ann Lynn, but I don't know if there was a change. So
no, let's make sure. Ann Lynn?
I'm wondering, you know, in the world of technology, I'm wondering if maybe she dropped.
So apologies, and hopefully maybe if she joins later, we can catch some of her tips. So I just wanted to make sure that we didn't leave somebody out. And Shayla, also the slide number is a little off. I'm going to put you back here. Let's see. So common earnings denials, and I'm presently showing slide 16, which has the four numbers for common earnings and denials. Okay, Shayla.
Okay, thank you. So we're looking at common earnings denials, and we have 8 months or less of SGA levels of earnings. Then we have earnings less than SGA levels, 9 months of SGA earnings, but it's not within a 12-month period, and then earnings not found. We will go into depth with earnings not found because we don't want that to be confused with a 590 denial for earnings. So for the next slide, we start with 8 or less months of SGA. So you have, as I explained earlier, that you are privy to quarterly information. SSA has several sources where we receive our information from. So we receive it from the claimants, IRS. We have other agencies that we work with. We receive it from elsewhere, so therefore, as we have our SGA information, by law, we are supposed to count monthly evidence, and so it says that there should be 9 consecutive months of SGA in our regulations, so we start with monthly. We also know that FSA and disability laws allow us to do secondary sources and so forth. So that's why we are able to look at quarterly and then annual information. But our first, and this is one that happens the most often, it's 8 or less months of SGA, meaning that you, and we're going to go through these SGA limits just to give you an idea or a framework in mind. So an SGA, the SGA limits for non-blind, let's say for 2019, the monthly amount is $1,220, the quarterly amount is $3,660, and the annual amount is $14,640. Whereas the SGA for that same year for blind is $2,040 per month, $6,120 quarterly, and $24,480 annually. So when we're looking at SGA, our first source is to look for anything that is 12, 20, and above for your monthly SGA. But we know we run into quarterly most times, and then you see your quarterly information. And we say, okay, you gave us quarterly information, and you said to us, well, you know, for the second quarter, which we're then dealing with April, May, and June, they had $4,000. So you're averaging for 3 months. We then go to our system and we see that, yes, in April they had $2,000. In May they had $1,500. And then, unfortunately, in June they only had $500. And we were supposed to do our monthly evidence first. We then have to issue a notice saying, yeah, there was enough information. We looked through this. We looked from 1 through 9, and we saw one of the months where they only had, you know, 8 months of SGA because 1 month they only made $500 instead of that $1,220. And so you end up with a notice that says they had 8 or less months of SGA. And the code for blind, for non-blind is a 220. And the reason why the numbers change in the code is because how the notice reads across. So when you do have a 225, it's to say that either your blind agency or SSA on our records, as we coded them and they came to our disability office, we decided that they were blind. And it actually says that you did not make blind SGA because the blind SGA amount isn't 1220. It is 2040 for the month. So the codes change, they change the notice as well. So that's one of our most common ones. The next slide and the next one that you will see where it's earnings less than SGA. So therefore, you didn't even make it to SGA. You might have been on trial work levels, and I believe for 2019, the month more than 880 would be a trial work level amount. So you made this a little bit above 880, and that's fine, but you're nowhere near SGA levels. You do have earnings, but you're not at SGA levels. And so for the non-blind, it goes out in the notice in the 210 to say, yeah, you didn't have non-blind SGA. And then, of course, the 215, that 5 then tells us that there was blindness involved or low vision, and you did not make blind SGA. So we send out a notice for that. Next slide would be our 9 out of 12 months or 9 out of 13 months. So now you have 9 months of SGA. But somehow it carried all the way from 1-2019 to 1-2020, and that's how we found 9 months of SGA. You absolutely have to have 9 out of 12 months. It is the regulation. It's the law. So we, as I said, we follow that monthly. But in addition to that, even quarterly, you would have to have 3 quarters out of the 4 quarters to make the year. So the annual, the annual amount is also important. So even when we're dealing with quarters, and then we say, as again, for 320 for the non-blind, and then 325 to say you did not make, you know, 9 out of 12 blind months of SGA, it became 9 out of 13 or 9 out of 14. We would have had to start our count again. We haven't even gone through 9 months of 2020, so we're not able to pay this claim. Our last one on the next slide is earnings not found. I stated this earlier, and you have several systems. I heard Marilyn speak of it. I definitely heard Annie talk about Tracker. I heard them talking about Tracker and other systems that you are able to find earnings and earnings information, your state system. SSA, as I said previously, sometimes our system doesn't catch up as fast. We're also relying on the claimants. And if you think you're looking for claim, believe it or not, even though we're paying them disability benefits sometimes in our disability office, and I came from our disability office, it's pretty difficult even to find them to say, hey, we're giving you your disability check. So it becomes, difficult for us to have this information. This is actually one of the rare ones. We're usually able to find some kind of earnings. But there are few cases where we've looked in our 6 or 7 resources. So we've looked at quarterly. We've had several monthly sources. We look at annual resources. We're looking at our IRS data. We're looking in our IPOP system. We're looking in other Social Security systems. And we cannot find any earnings for this individual. And then you will get a denial that says there are no earnings anywhere for this person, although you might have said, yes, you were pretty sure that there were earnings. Now, the difference between that 200 and that 590, where you would have been denied 590 for earnings and then the 200 for not being able to have earnings, is at a 590, you as the VR are responsible for staying. Using Ticket Tracker, once we open up a claim and we click on a work number to process your claim, the remarks actually pop out at us and say, hey, here are my earnings, and here are 3/4 of earnings, and it gives us a list of dates, quarters, years, and so forth that says, yeah, this person had $4,000 this quarter, and then they had, $8,000 this quarter, and then this quarter they had the $3,660, and we're looking at all these years and we're seeing that, and it immediately comes up on our screen. If it does not, and that happens through Tracker and some of the other systems, Bursar, we're able to provide that for you. You as VRs are able to print off a fax cover sheet and store this information, and so therefore we click on the two other areas where you would have faxed in this information to see, were there earnings? Did the VR do their job in saying, I am almost positive that this claim is viable, it's absolutely payable, there's nowhere in my mind that, it wouldn't be payable. I know I'm using quarterly information, but I have clear evidence to say this claim should be paid. And you're the VR providing that information for us. And we click on those other two places and we don't see any earnings. We deny that claim. That's it. Like, there's nothing else that happens with that claim. We did not get that pop-up and we did not get any earnings information from you. So that is a 590 denial. A 200 is, you did provide us with that information. We got the pop-up or we clicked on something and we saw, okay, the VR says their earnings for this person. They did their job. They did the legwork. Now we have to search through Social Security system to actually process the claim. So now we're looking, was the person blind or disabled at the time of VR? Was this during the VR period? Were their earnings? Do they have the ticket assigned in use SVR? We're actually processing the claim, and we go through all the steps because, remember, it's not just earnings you have to meet for a criteria for payment. You also have to make sure they weren't terminated, and Annie talked about that. So we're checking that, too. Were they terminated? Are they disabled? Were they on somebody else's record? So we then go through the claim to process it under the rules and regulations for our other criteria to have a VR payment. And then we go through all of those things and we get to earnings and we see we don't have anywhere where they're earnings. That's how one receives a 200 because we actually tried to go into the claim. You gave us information. We said, okay, the VR had all that they needed. Now let me see if it matches, if it's in alignment with SSA information. And we don't see any earnings. They are disabled.
they were in VR at the time, we just don't see any earnings. That constitutes a 200 denial. That makes it the difference between the 590 and the 200. A 590 is an on-site thing. It's over. We opened that claim up. We don't have that information. We don't want to know anything else about that claim. It's denied because we asked you to have that information. It's the law. We want to make sure that you do it. It's on your checklist. It should have happened. A 200, we're delving further into the claim. We're trying to process the claim. You provided us the information. We've moved on. It takes a little bit more time. So that's the difference between a 590 and a 200. And I don't want you to be confused to think that 590 and 200 is the same. So they're different. And you can still receive a 200, although you've given us earnings information. That's where things like the work number comes into play, because as I said, sometimes you have more information than we have, and you're able to say, I know you didn't find earnings, but the work number provided me with earnings. And I know there are times there's no way you could know that we're not going to find earnings. But once again, when you're doing that reconsideration, I was denied this 200. Here's what happened. Here's the date. And here's the information from the work number. Now I'm submitting it with evidence to show you that I now can give you earnings. You weren't able to find any, but I have earnings. I have state information that you may not have. So that's why we say make sure you're putting all the pertinent information to ensure that you receive maximum reimbursement, that the entire granted amount is allowed or some of it. Just do as best that you can. When this comes across, then you now know that, okay, this was a 200. I'm able to have access to this information. And then I believe the next slide would be for one of the states to then explain to us some more of the tips that are useful for us. So I'll pass it back to Adele.
Thank you, Shada. Yes, Annie Zaffron with Texas Workforce Commission.
Thanks again, Adele. Okay, so regarding reconsiderations, I suggest not resubmitting a claim until you have at least two or preferably three new quarters of wages, even though that means waiting possibly months or years for that to occur. If you send a recon with just one or two new quarters, you risk losing reimbursement entirely since you don't know which previous quarters had low-earning months, and we can no longer submit more than one reconsideration. So unless your client is in his mid to late 60s age-wise and you're thus in a time crunch, it is probable that he or she will make SGA again in the future with fresh wages. In regard to denials, if you believe some of your claims were denied in error, I suggest waiting until you've received all the notices of determination for that month. Then send one email to SSA asking them to review those specific claims. The way that I do this is to build and attach a spreadsheet with five columns consisting of the SSN, the client name, the work case ID, denial code, and a column for notes. And under notes, I explain precisely why I believe the denial was incorrect. For example, if a claim was denied for low wages, I'll list the exact wages for each quarter. On rare occasions, SSA may discover that they have a complete quarter of wages missing for your state. It's happened to me several times over the years. So definitely question the decision if something seems seriously off. I also carefully check claims that have been paid in case the payment amount is short. Sometimes direct costs are accidentally missed, so list those exact costs and their corresponding dates. Or maybe the net payment period is shortened. This can happen if only one type of benefit was researched by accident. For example, if a client had both SSDI and SSI, but the technician only checked for SSI, while SSDI had a longer payment period, you'll be paid a lesser amount. So again, explain those details in your spreadsheet. The bottom line is that you need to make your own case for why each claim should be paid, and it's best to do so in as organized a manner as possible. Thanks, and I'll hand it back to Adele.
Thank you very much. Again, it has been valuable helping each other out, so we definitely appreciate that. Okay, Shada, we'll move on with vocational rehabilitation client earnings report, which is the Verser. And I just want to remind, as I indicated earlier, for recording or for posting purposes, the slide coming up with information will not be available once we post that. So this is only for this audience. I just want to make sure that when you look for this later on, you realize why it wasn't there. And let's see, we have coming to the table, we'll have David Leon and Sue Tegan, and they're going to talk to us a little bit about their tips. David?
Thank you very much. We are excited to be here and just wanted to take a moment to share a little bit about our CSAVR work group. The work group was established after the 2018 Spring CSAVR Conference, and it was based on feedback from the in-person participants on the need to have more regular peer-to-peer conversations on how to grow VR agencies' ticket-to-work and cost reimbursement programs. Thanks to CSAVR, they provided a secure web page on their website along with a conference line that has been used monthly since June of 2018. In any given month, over 70 different state agencies are represented on calls. Participants represent their combined general or blind VR agencies. The work group calls are open to VR agency staff whose responsibilities include the Ticket to Work program, cost reimbursement, and Partnership Plus programs. Our work group meetings are held at 2 p.m. Eastern on the third Tuesday of each month, and occasionally based on interest or by special request, meetings have included invited guests such as representatives from Equifax to discuss the work number, an SSA representative to discuss the state wage and exchange system and how to access that, and an individual from the National Employment Network Association for assistance with a survey on how to grow Partnership Plus. In addition, we've had Jay Morrow come on to help troubleshoot issues or requests for how to grow and create a more useful tracker program. I hope people that are here that have not participated choose to participate in our monthly calls. And with that, I will turn it over to Sue Tegan.
Okay. Additionally, the work group has collaborated to develop or produce trainings based on emerging issues and opportunities for state VR agencies. A few examples are an informational discussion led by Willette Bowers of Florida VR on dual funding streams for VR program income. And Eugenia Cox of Oregon VR had an introductory VR 101 trainings that were very well attended and good for first-time ticket to work and cost reimbursement coordinators. And she most recently presented a training on how to review denied claims for a potential resubmittal. The webpage is located on the CSAVR website, which is www.csavr.org, under the Resources tab. The webpage has sections such as meeting minutes, resource documents, and all of the trainings are listed with the presentations and actual video recordings. There's many times we get requests to summarize by subjects from the different state agencies based on a specific question they might wonder about. And a recent example, California's question on how states provide benefits planning services to consumers. Now, a password is required for access to the web page, so please email me or David if you are interested in joining the work group.
Thank you for this opportunity to share about the work group, and I'm going to hand it back to Adele.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sue and David. And we're going to continue with some more tips, and hopefully this time Ann Lynn would be on, and then after Ann Lynn, we'll have Arlene. Ann, sorry about earlier. Are you there to help us out today?
Yes. Can you hear me fine?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry about
that. That's okay. I'm Ann Lynn Banton, and I'm with the Virginia Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired, a.k.a. Virginia Blind Agency. I have been with the agency now well over 15 years, and this is not my primary job, which is being the SSA coordinator and ticket-to-work coordinator, but I have found myself to be, after probably about 5 years into the process of learning the policies and learning the ins and outs and working with other agencies, and most importantly, when we could ever get back face-to-face, attending the CSAVR, SSA cost reimbursement trainings, and as well attending any of these types of webinars to be very successful for me in helping me learn the process. So let me just go over a few of the things that I find to be helpful in the way that I organize myself and some tips and why maybe some differences between the blind agency and the general agency filing for those reimbursement claims. So I always schedule a few hours each month for this task to make sure that I allow enough time to thoroughly review all of the potential claims that I believe are ready to be processed either in the current month's period of time or by the end of the current quarter period. I do attempt to file a successful claim as soon as I have finished reviewing the detailed information, which includes making sure I have reviewed my checks and balances, but this does not always work out for me. I have found that more claims at the end of a quarter period than trying to file a claim when I know that it's ready to go at that moment in time, just because I am the senior management analyst for our agency. And so I have a lot of other functions as well. So sometimes timing gets off a little bit. However, I do have all of my identified claims filed before the close of the fourth quarter, or sooner if I have to make sure that it gets in. You want to make sure to file those identified claims before the fourth quarter closes so that you're not bumping up against a timely filing issue, and to make sure you are keeping up the program income coming in on a quarterly basis. I used to not do this in my first few years of learning the process, and I do recall one time when our commissioner then sent an email up to my supervisor, who then spoke with me and wanted to know, why is our program income not steadily coming in? Okay, so if this is one way that you can kind of ensure a steady flow of that income hitting into your treasury department and your budget, rather than just chopping it up and maybe just holding everything out for a long period of time, and then again eliminating yourself from missing out on those timely, not having to get those timely filing denials. The tools that I use to help with my process are the what we call the VEC, which is the Virginia Employment Commission's WAIS system, SEAS, which is your State Verification and Exchange System. I heavily rely on contacts with other SSA coordinators. I always like to get some information from them. What are they doing? Have they seen this? How do they handle this? Sharing tips and ideas together I found to be very helpful and useful. Most certainly the VR Help Desk with SSA is definitely spot on. I also use the Ticket to Work Reimbursement Tracker System. We have found that to be beneficial for us. It is a cost to the agency, but I have found that we are able to generate probably a few more claims that maybe I personally could not manually spot quick enough that then would then become a time and file a denial. So I have seen the benefits from that. I also use our case management system, which does include at times running various different types of reports out of the system to help me navigate and look for those cases that I need to pay attention to that maybe are in their 80th day of employment, and they're soon going to be hitting that 90-day mark, and probably I need to start looking at those SGA levels to see if they've begun maybe in that first quarter to start to earn some income and where things stand with how I'm going to continue to track for that claim. Your case notes, your plans, your VR plans, and some of the notes that you see on the plans with those types of services, I have found that if you're questioning information as to whether this service was something that maybe supported or didn't support the activity of getting that outcome, that employment outcome, you can gain some information by having some knowledge of what's on that VR plan. I do not wait until I'm ready to work up a claims process to determine if I have a ticket in place. I do my best to follow up with tickets assigned with other VR agencies or employment networks at the time I am aware of those other assignments. And I try to make sure that each month that I'm sending through my ticket assignment report. I have not done that on a regular basis at all times most recently because I am a one-person shop, and I used to have some support, but now that support moved on to another position. So it's a timing issue sometimes for those of us that have to cover all of these areas by ourselves. But if you put your mind to it and set up a good process, you can get it done. If I'm not successful in getting a ticket unassigned, I will work through some negotiations to share the ticket, making sure that DBVI is not providing the same VR services that the other entity is providing. Sometimes this may involve some contacts with not only just the employment network or another state VR agency, but sometimes I'll need to reach out to my representative with the ticket program manager group to get some advice to know, you know, how I should go forward and handle certain situations. But we are finding that to be successful for us. On a more complex process, I have been successful in getting the ticket unassigned with another entity and assigned to DBVI for the services that DBVI will need to provide to the individual, and then, of course, moving the ticket back to the other entity when DBVI is finished providing the services we have identified on the individual's VR plan. And, again, it does take some negotiations. It does take some coordination. It does take a few phone calls. But, again, we've been successful at this approach. It's not meaning that we have set up any type of written agreements or any type of arrangements that have gone through various different approval processes. We have just found that if we come to the table together and collaborate and talk through the process, the interest is for the client, and we both have agreed that is our main focus and interest, so we agree then to work together and make this happen. But, again, it does take time and processes, but it can be done. Some tips that I wanted to share that I have found to be helpful for me to help me stay on track for timely filing. I always run a seed verification for SSA benefit at the application status for all VR applicants and then record that information in a case management system.
If needed, I will re-verify a current benefit status once I have identified a claim for potential filing. So I say this, if needed, to re-verify, because in our case management system, I have a process set up for the VR counselor to update the SSA benefit information after application and before closure so that I can review that. With that information, I will decide if I need to request a new verification of benefits. I used to, before I had this process set up in our case management system, I used to always take the time, and when I knew that I had a potential claim, I automatically ran another verification process through SEEDS to re-verify. I don't necessarily have to do that as much anymore, so that is a time savings for me. but it is something that you need to plan for and identify before you submit any of your claims, because death as a benefits process for the individuals do change. And I just have found that to be very helpful. So you may consider something like that. And if you can't, then, of course, I would definitely recommend verify those SSA benefits so that you understand your VR period of time along with those benefit processes. I use the ticket tracker system to track the claims that I am working on. I also use the Social Security, I'll give you the official name, the Social Security Internet Ticket to Work portal, so our SSA portal, to look at what the individual's ticket record is showing with the individual's cash benefit status. You can find this information at the bottom of the ticket assignment page. And I do find that helpful, too, again, if I haven't run for SSA verification again after application and before closure, then I will a lot of times just open up the SSA portal, the ticket portal, and I will look to see what's going on, what's been reported on that ticket assignment page down at the bottom, to see what the date time frame is looking at for their cash benefits in or out of status. And I have found that also to give me some indicators of whether I should rerun a verification or not. Some other tips, it is very important to place an individual's ticket in use SVR with SSA. As soon as the
Sorry for the interruption. I realize that Arlene would need to jump off, so if we just jump over to her real quick and then we can come back.
I'm almost finished anyway. Go ahead.
Awesome. Arlene?
Thank you. I didn't know if you would remember, and I was going to hang on as long as I could. sorry about that, Ann Lynn, as I was actually learning a lot from you, and I always do. So this is Arlene Lugo, and I'm the Ticket to Work Coordinator for Connecticut, both VR General and Blind. And I don't have much to say, and I'm fairly new. At least I consider myself fairly new. I've been doing cost reimbursement and Ticket to Work since late 2017, early 2018, for both agencies. Prior to me taking over this role, our Blind agency rarely submitted claims, and if they did, rarely got any reimbursements back, according to their director. They are very pleased now that I've taken over and have learned how to do the process. The number of claims that we submit for our VR Blind agency are still very low. Sometimes in a quarter, I'm only submitting two, maybe a few more than that. But it seems that we are having more success now with our favorable decisions, and we're bringing funds into the VR Blind Agency in Connecticut. Let me add that I do also use the Morrow Ticket Tracker, which makes it a lot easier. And like Ann Lynn said, I also am a one-person operation with a variety of other duties. So the Ticket Tracker absolutely simplifies it for me. What I find with the VR Blind cost reimbursements is that although the number of claims that we submit are fairly low, the individual reimbursement amount can be quite high. So in the past 3 years or so, since 2018 to now, as I said, the VR Blind agency director has been pretty happy with the reimbursements that we have received so far. And I do foresee with Versa in place that this number will go up and we'll be able to submit better claims and have a better reimbursement rate. Also, we don't use Swiss data yet, so I feel like we are leaving some potential money on the table there, and we're working on that. I just also want to say, you know, in terms of the benefits of the CSABR work group, as I said, I took over the role in 2018, and fortunately the timing worked out that I was able to attend the CSABR and SSA training in April of that year in person. And that was super helpful for me in providing me with a foundation of knowledge to really help me understand how to do this process. But I still was pretty much on my own once I came back. The person I took over from retired, so there wasn't too many people to turn to if I had any questions. But as David and Sue said, the CSABR work group started shortly after that in-person training. And, you know, in addition to the SSA OVR calls, which have also been very helpful for me to learn a lot, the work group has provided consistency of information and learning and materials that as any newer person, it's very helpful to have. It's an ongoing dialogue. The agenda is tailored to what's actually going on with health security, with the trend, to our specific needs or questions that we have. They're very responsive. It's an experienced network of peers who are willing to answer questions and provide guidance. So when I received my first PBR, I knew exactly who to call, Sue and Ann Lynn, to guide me through that process, and that worked out well. And then also, as Sue mentioned, the archived resources and trainings on the web portal are super helpful as well. So anyone who's not participating in the calls, I would recommend that you give it a try, at least attend one or two of them just to see. It's just an additional support in addition to the SSA help desk and those calls, which they've always been excellent to work with and very helpful as well. But I have found them to be the two support systems to be extremely helpful. So I encourage everyone to attend, and I do apologize that as I have to jump off and attend a different training, but I thank you all, and thank you for having me on the call.
Thank you so much, Marlene. Appreciate it. And, yes, so I'm going to display, as Arlene mentioned, we are learning a lot from Ann Lynn, but I do want to have some time to answer some questions. I have quite a few here. What I'm posting right now, we have all of the presenters' email addresses if there's any questions you want to ask them directly. But what we're going to do is open up the line for questions. And then I can also have answered some of the questions from the chat. I'll ask those out loud. So, Hannah, if you can help us with those questions, please.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star, followed by the 1 on your telephone keypad. Also, if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, it is star 1 to ask a question.
While we wait for that to compile, let's see if I can track. Warren from North Dakota asked, the status could also say essentially was assigned to us, but it's no longer. I think that's when Shada was actually speaking at the beginning, so I think that was a tip from Warren. And we have Lacey. As she's indicating, in Montana, we use J. Marl's ticket tracker, and I believe that evidence needed is included with tracker. However, we still have a high rate of denial. And she's wondering if there's any suggestions on what she can do about that.
Hi, it's Eric. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I would like to just know for that caller if the denials are wage related denials or other reasons, because I think that would be important to know what's causing that problem or the denial rate.
Well, we'll see if they chime in. Thank you for helping out with that, Eric. Let's see in the chat. Do the state CR agencies have precedence over ENs in the same state as far as a ticket assignment?
And just in case anyone can jump in any time, do the state VR agencies have precedent over ENs in the same state as far as a ticket assignment?
Adele, this is Arlene, and I am still on the call, so I can answer what I do. I do try to have a good rapport with my ENs, but there are times where they don't follow through on unassigning a ticket when the consumer is working with VR, our state VR system. So I've been using the ticket unassignment form directly with the consumer in those situations and talking to the consumers through the counselors about why our state VR agency is trying to assign the ticket and what's the benefit of that and how it's a win-win situation and that we can always refer them back to the EN through the Partnership Plus model after our services are done. And I just use that on those situations where maybe it's a different state VR that hasn't been responding or someone I don't have a rapport with or they just haven't followed through and, you know, just try to get that ticket. And that form was something provided by SSA to us.
All right. Thank you for helping out with that. Is there a plan to change the employment coding from DOT code, which is now a defunct classification system, to SOC, SOC, which RSA 911 uses?
Adele, that's been addressed to Katie and I, and so we will further look into that. As you know, this is a fairly new system that we've been using, and we've done several updates. So I know we've recently changed the service codes to make them match RSA new service codes. Katie and I are in dialogue about that, so we're working on trying to mesh with RSA and the new regulations under WIOA.
Okay, thank you for that. Hannah, do we have any questions in the queue?
Currently, there are no questions in queue. As a reminder, that is star one.
Okay. I do have plenty to work from here. What's the best way to determine whether blind SGA is needed or not?
This is Dan Lynn. You've got to understand quite a bit before you can ever get to that SGA. And first of all, you need to understand what year you're looking at as far as the claim filing period to know what your SGA level is. And you've got to understand your VR benefit period of time. I mean, the SSA benefits along with your VR period of time. I was going to go through more information in my presentation to kind of help a little bit to make you think about some things. But my information is on the slideshow, and you're welcome to email me, and I can help you go through it further. It is more complex than just a straight-out answer. There's no way to give you a straight-out answer. But, again, you've got to know what year of SGA you need to be tracking for and where all the information lines up to know if you've got a successful blind SGA claim.
Thank you for helping with that. For proof of income, can we use our state's Department of Labor interface?
This is Shada. Yes, we would take that information. We just need to make sure that you do provide us with earnings information and that it shows at least those three quarters of earnings.
Thank you for that. And when you say that we have the 199 ready, are you talking about manually entering a cost reimbursement claim? Because many of us actually send batches of claims.
Some of you send batches of claims, but what happens is the system times out on you. So if you're using a system like Ticket Tracker, that doesn't necessarily happen the same way. For others, the system times out on you, so you're not able to input all that claims information for your service codes and costs and the services that were provided. So, yes, we need that $199 as a backup. In addition, Annie mentioned this about your net payment period and those C3 notices. We also have a C7 notice that says that we don't know where these costs fall because you just give us a big range of dates. So it would be from 5/2012 to 9/2016, and then it's for $25,000, and we need to see individual costs and services that were provided for that time period because it does affect your net payment period and then how we're able to pay you, if we're able to pay you the full amount or not.
Thanks, Shada. Can we put UI wage information in the remarks section on the claim as wage verification for cost reimbursement?
So I know some of you use your state UI system. That is fine that you use that system, but if there are actually unemployment income wages, no, unemployment income is not wages to us. So your state system, it comes from your unemployment wage system, but it cannot be unemployment wages. Unemployment is not SGA. It's not earnings to us. It actually has to fall under the thought of going back to work. So there has to be some kind of work because that's what we're trying to do, get you back to work or get the disabled claimant back to work.
Thank you. Hannah, do we have any questions in the queue?
No questions in queue at this time.
Okay, I will continue. Do we have any suggestions for how to use Versa without the ticket tracker?
Hey, it's Eric. I can give you an idea on what we did before we actually imported it from Maryland into. We have a ticket tracker, but when we had a first kind of file, what I actually did with it was I pulled it into Excel, and I actually ran a query so I could identify. For me, the easiest way to do it was actually turned all of the letter codes into numbers, and then I summed the row to see if it was above a certain total, because that number, basically I used the D or above, because those are SGA, and so then if I summed that row, and I used basically, you know, a 1 or a 0, if it was a 1, for it would be above SGA, then I looked to see if the sum of that row for that individual was 3 or above, and that it might be a claim. Now, I know that there's 8 quarters or however many quarters there are in that row. So then I would see, now, are those 3 in a row? But I was able to kind of eliminate a whole bunch of individuals that either had lower than the total. So I'm not sure if that makes a lot of sense, but I had to kind of rather than having to manually each look at one individually, I figured out a way to basically say, is this individual have at least some quarters where it's above an SGA? And then if it was at least 3 of those, then I could kind of sort that Excel spreadsheet out to show me only those ones with 3s or above. And then I was able to, from those, look at those individually and say, now, are those consecutive, and do it that way. It's kind of a very roundabout way to do it, but it was actually very successful to find that. So if somebody has a question about trying that out, I can certainly talk with you on email afterwards, kind of how we did that. But that was just a way for us to kind of do a shorthand approach. Somebody may have some better suggestions. If you're a little bit more savvy with Excel than probably I am, you could do a more advanced sort in Excel, probably to find certain criteria like that, or you could pull that into a more advanced software. There's some more capable softwares out there that you could do some advanced queries, maybe working with a data person in your agency, if you can kind of give them that suggestion, like say, hey, I have this row of data. I need to see this certain sequence of events. I need to see this D or above in three rows or three columns in a row, then a data person actually would be able to help run a query in that sort. So it's just a matter of kind of taking that that information and kind of rethinking it a little bit. And again, I'd be happy to kind of talk with you separately about that if you want to just email me afterwards.
All right. Thank you. I think if we can have Ann Lynn just talk a little bit about where, pick up where she was. We're at 4 minutes till the end of the call. So if you can help us out with that, Ann Lynn.
Okay, so I'll run through some tips that I had of things that you just need to kind of put in place. These are things that I collected over the years, learned from other cost reimbursement coordinators and that we have trained on and mentioned in our CSAVR SSA training. It is very important to place an individual's ticket in use SVR as soon as the individual's VR plan is active and signed. We've talked about that today. A CR claim needs to be filed within 1 year from the time the beneficiary reaches the continuous period of 9 months of SGA, not 1 year after case closure. So you need to be careful about that. There was a lot of confusions before that one would think that the VR case needed to be closed first, and that's not true. Once the individual meets those SGA allowed amounts, then you need to prepare to file that claim within that 1 year period of time. Do not wait, because then you take a risk of timely filing. State VR agencies might be able to file cost reimbursement claims with beneficiaries when their case was closed unsuccessfully after receiving services under a VR plan. And I say might because you've got to look at several different factors. You need to look at length of time from when they ended their case, when they met SGA. You may end up having to support, if you file the complaint, you may have to end up supporting the reason why your VR agency was the reason for them to have that success for SGA. State VR agencies can file cost reimbursement claims on beneficiaries who are still receiving VR services if they achieve, I mentioned that before. Keep tracking individuals for as long as possible. For blind agencies, this may mean you will be tracking for a few years until the individual reaches SGA. So because of this reason, you need to have some tracking processes in place. You need to have some reports in place that can help you identify who these individuals are so that you don't lose contact with that information and continue to keep tracking until that SGA level is met. For the CR program, the cost reimbursement program may be administered differently in different states, but the rules are the same for all states, for all agencies, whether you're general, whether you're blind. So you need to become familiar with your provider handbook, keep it handy, and read into it. When you have questions, I find that I should go to the handbook, and then sometimes what I'll do is tag those pages to help me keep remembering those steps until I've got it down. Everyone can learn something from SSA or other state agencies. Collaboration is a must. Working together as a team will allow you to be more knowledgeable and your agency's cost reimbursement program more successful. Ask questions and seek clarification when you are uncertain. Contact the VR help desk. And then lastly, a couple of points that I have, and I'm trying to reach out now to our blind agencies, you can be successful with this. Although claims processed by a blind agency are in smaller numbers, all of the rules and procedures are the same as they are with a general agency. What is different is the time that it takes to track for SGA. This is due to the difference in the level of SGA for blind individuals, and we've just talked about that. However, although this is true for most situations, it does not mean that your VR counselor has not placed an individual in an upper-level position earning income above the SGA level within their first month. Therefore, you have to prepare for this. You need to set up a solid process and then be consistent in the following and following those processes. Verify the benefit status as often as needed. Cases served by a blind agency can be lengthy in time, and benefits for individuals most likely will change. Your SSA coordinator needs to understand the VR process. At a minimum, they need to have a basic understanding of the case movements and the time that it takes to move a case from application to service and then follow through with the individual's employment activity to case closure. The payout of one claim most likely will be significant due to the types of VR services and the cost associated with those services. You are leaving money on the table by not processing cost reimbursement claims. Lastly, stay focused, be committed to the process, and reach out to the VR help desk whenever you have a question, concern, or want to make sure you have a clear understanding of policy. All of this is how you build your confidence and become successful with bringing in program income to your agency. That's it.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. We are 2 minutes after the call. There's one question I did want to ask, and it asked, when is the next Verser report coming out?
This is Katie. It is coming out the first week of August. It should be quarterly from now on.
Appreciate it. And we do have a number of questions that we will still address, and we will send that out on a separate document. I do see that someone has indicated that they've shared a lot of tips, and we do appreciate that. And definitely we will get to all of those. Any closing remarks, Katie?
I just wanted to thank everyone for their time, and we look forward to your feedback and your questions. And that's all I have. John, did you want to have any closing remarks?
Thank you. I just echo what Katie said. Just again, thank all the presenters and everyone that's tuned in, and certainly a lot of great questions. So thank you all for taking your time this afternoon to be a part of this presentation and training.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Katie, and thank you all for participating. I wish you a great rest of the day.
And that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.